Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, David.
Whenever I hear, "Oh God, beautiful," I always think of Masters talking about being in New York City and how he led the group singing in "Oh God, beautiful" for 1 hour, and how there were many healings and so much upliftment during that time. What a wonderful thought to have Master in the room with his powerful personality, his great sense of humor. And that reminds me of one of Master's ministers talking about how when Master made him a minister, he would give a talk, but before he gave the talk, he was always worried about having Master's blessings, so he would send a telegram to Master and tell him what date and what time he was going to be giving the talk so that Master could be praying for him and thinking about him at that time. And he always felt Master's blessing and his presence when he gave the talk. After Master left the body, he thought, well, what am I going to do now? How do I send a telegram to Master? And so he would go inside and he would pray to Master until he felt his presence. And he wouldn't start the talk before that moment happened. How wonderful, how beautiful to think of Master's presence as I feel him in this room, as I feel Mother in this room, as I sat here earlier. And to feel the presence of these great Masters. Focusing on these great God-men and God-women in this way is not idolatry. Idolatry is when you place something of a lower nature and make that your God. But these great Masters, they are Masters because they have mastered themselves. They have learned how to focus their attention completely upon God and become absorbed in God consciousness. Therefore, they can say, as Jesus said, "I and my Father are one." And it is true. It is true. It is not just simply an affirmation, although it is a very powerful affirmation. But it is a realized truth, and there is a great deal of difference between an affirmation and realized truth. So when you put your mind upon anyone who has realized their oneness with God, it acts as a direct link to God, and therefore it is not an idol, but it is God itself, or God himself, or herself, who has revealed that divine nature to you. And so it is a great blessing, a very great blessing indeed, to think on these great gurus, these great spiritual masters. Would you please join me in prayer? O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints
and sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King,
reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Chanting like that, the rest is just commentary. Reading from Master's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, beginning with verse 45. Krishna speaking, by diligently following this path, the yogi, perfected by the efforts of many births, is purged of sin
and karmic taint, and finally enters the supreme beatitude. The yogi is deemed greater than body-disciplining ascetics, greater even than the followers of the path of wisdom or of the path of action. Be thou, O Arjuna, a yogi. And Master's commentary. Asceticism is a bypath because it teaches man to reach God indirectly by outer renunciation and physical discipline. The path of theoretical wisdom is also a bypath because it teaches the confusing way of academically reasoning about him. The path of action is also a bypath because it teaches the circuitous way of reaching God through external good actions. The Lord himself here extols the royal path of yoga as the highest of all spiritual paths, and the scientific yogi as greater than the follower of any other path. The real Kriya Yoga way of life force control is not a bypath. It is the direct highway, the shortest route to divine realization. It teaches man to ascend heavenward by leading the ego, mind, and life force through the same spinal channel that was used when the soul originally descended into the body. The spirit as soul has descended through the subtle astral cerebral spinal centers into the brain and the spinal plexus, and into the nervous system, the senses, and the rest of the body, and becomes entangled there as a pseudo-soul or ego. In the body-identified state, the ego engages in further involvement in and with the objective world. The ego has to be made to ascend through the same spinal path until it realizes its true self as the soul, and the soul reunites with the spirit. Isn't this commentary just absolutely clear about the way to ascend into heavenly consciousness? Yoga points out that the spinal route is the one straight highway that the all-earth-descended mortal beings must follow in the final ascension to liberation. All other paths, those that emphasize the performance of tapasya, bodily and mental discipline, or theoretical knowledge of the scriptures, the gaining of wisdom by discrimination, or the performance of all good actions, are auxiliary paths that somewhere join the highway of practical yoga that leads straight to liberation. The ascetic who is busy with disciplining the body, putting it through rigorous austerities, may attain a degree of control over the physical instrumentality, but merely practicing postures, enduring cold and heat, not giving in to sorrow and pleasure, without simultaneously concentrating on cosmic consciousness, is only a roundabout pathway to gaining the mental control necessary for God communion. The yogi attains communion with the Lord directly by withdrawing his consciousness from the senses and the nervous system, the spine and the brain, and uniting it with his God-knowing soul. Many devotees are so engrossed in following the precepts of external asceticism and renunciation that they forget that the ecstasy with the infinite is the purpose of such discipline. When the scriptural philosopher dissects words and thoughts with the scalpel of his reason, he may grow so fond of theoretical knowledge and of mentally separating wisdom into various segments that he may dry up through lack of the experience of truth in divine ecstasy. If a person spent his lifetime in analyzing the properties of water, in examining water from different sources all over the world, he would not thereby quench his thirst. A thirsty man, without fussing over the atomic constituencies, selects some good water, drinking it, he becomes satisfied. An esoteric jnani yogi, a follower of the path of discriminative reason, may read and analyze all the scriptures and still not slack his soul thirst. A theoretical knowledge of scriptures often produces a conviction that one knows the truth when actually he does not know it. Only by communing with God, the library of all knowledge, may one know all truths in their exactitude, without wasting time in theoretical understanding and misunderstanding of scriptures. That is why a wide gulf may exist between scripture readers and men of realization who are themselves embodiments of scriptural truths. This is so essential what Master is saying here. I hear many times people say, well, I know that already. And what they mean is that they have grasped it with their intellect. The problem is that they have not integrated it into their entire consciousness. This is the real work of sadhana. Certainly, we must know what we're headed for. We must have a goal in mind in order to be able to strive for anything at all in this world. And when it comes to our spiritual path, we must have some idea. It must go beyond attending church on Sundays and praying before meals and other such rituals that people oftentimes misunderstand as real spiritual living. Real spiritual living comes about when you are actively and consciously trying to unite yourself, your own individualized consciousness, with the universal consciousness of God. If not for this essential fact, then what other reason can you have for entering onto the spiritual path, really? The only real goal can be the conscious attainment of your oneness with God. What other thing can there be that is heavenly than that conscious realization? This is a problem that the world has not really encountered in terms of really solving the problem. Too many people the world over are focused on the externals, and too few are really focused on attaining that divine consciousness. So we must get clear on the goal. We must get clear on the goal. This time of year is a marking of the anniversary of the day that this body was born, and it always puts me in mind, even as the New Year's does, of where I am at spiritually, where am I at in my spiritual practice in realizing God and getting about the business for which I was born. And it is good that we have times, actually every day, every moment should be a time for reflection in this way. But there are times that are good to set aside specifically for that recollection of why you really came. I say a recollection because you know it already deep in your soul, why you have come, even as I know why I have come. And the deepest and most profound reason is for the realization of God. Now, there are many things that we have to attend to in this world. There is making a living as adults, as children, going to school, making friends. There is entertainment that is valued and is genuine. But without really making a genuine and sincere search for divine consciousness, we are really wasting our time here. We must be about our Father's business. We must be about attaining to this divine consciousness. I remember as a child that I would sit in my room by myself, and I would be in silence. And the sound of silence, that is how I called it at the time, because I had no other words. It was actually the Om that was resounding within me and all around me. It would become so deafening that it would hurt my head and it would hurt my ears. And yet there is no outward sound at all. It was an inward sound. Unfortunately, at the time, I didn't have the teachings. I didn't have a means for understanding that this tremendous powerful vibration could take me into divine consciousness. But I would listen to it and I was fascinated with it. It didn't necessarily expand my consciousness other than I recognized the feeling of power that was within it. It wasn't just a tone. It just wasn't something that I was listening to. I could feel the power of it. And there are very great practices within yoga where you listen to that om. You become engrossed in it. You surrender yourself to it. You immerse yourself into it. And when you do so, that powerful vibration, I was listening to it when we were meditating earlier, even though the music was playing, is a very powerful force and vibration that's coming into you. And it is perfectly attuned to divine consciousness. And if you will allow yourself to listen to it, and not just listen to it, but really immerse yourself in it, it will lift you into divine consciousness. And as you're listening to that and you're looking with these two eyes with your eyelids closed, but your attention up at the ajna, you will see, as I saw when I was meditating, that beautiful five-pointed star. And it is beautiful. But you don't end there. You see the gold, you see the blue. Even as I'm telling you, I'm seeing it within my own consciousness. And then you see that beautiful five-pointed star. And as you gaze upon it, allow yourself to merge into it. And when you merge into it, you enter into a sea of light. And as you allow yourself to fully merge into it, you emerge into that sea of light and absolute and total stillness. And you get to the point where you just are in a state of being. There is no subject and object. You feel yourself to be part and parcel of everything that is. And it is magnificent. It is beyond description, really. And you might think that at some point you would get tired of it. Because that's what the mind is used to. It's used to having a thing or having some pleasure or having something going on in its life that it's very excited about. And within a short amount of time, that wears off. And now you're tired of it, but you never get tired of God consciousness. It's a little bit of an amazing thing that the human ego has to get used to after a while. Because you never get tired of it. It is always new. It is always fresh. It is always taking you into the divine realms, and you can say that there are two aspects of God. The first aspect is called Nirguna, and that is the absolute stillness and peace of God. There is no second. There is just the oneness. And then there is the Saguna aspect of God, and that is God in all of its multiplicity. And when you open these two eyes and you go out into the world after you have purified your vision, you see this world as an expression of divine consciousness, where before you opened these two eyes and you saw only objects, some of them beautiful, some of them ugly, some of them you're attracted to, some of them you're repulsed to. Now you see and feel within your being the vibration of God in every God-blessed thing that you see, every person that you meet. And there is no criteria for seeing that divine vibration. There's no discrimination, you might say, at that point. There is only God. And God is all-pervasive. Now, this takes some getting used to. This takes some time to get there. I've told you before, I think, how I once asked Mother, and I said, you know, Mother, I feel great, God so greatly inside of me, but when I get around groups of people, it's painful for me. And I don't see God in them. And she said, first you find God within yourself, and then you see him everywhere about you. And that was the truth, of course. She taught nothing but the truth. And as you continue to purify the mind, gradually, gradually, that divine light, that divine power that's in you, begins to emanate out. And it emanates out through even your own physical eyes. So that you look out through these two eyes and you see a world that is almost, you might describe, as a fantasy land. It is heavenly consciousness right here on earth. You see the divine nature that is residing behind everything that you look at. And it is beautiful and tremendous beyond words. And then, if God wills it, you reside more in what we might call a human consciousness. Only it is not going back to where you started at. Now you feel your oneness with God, and as you interact with the world, you're not necessarily imbued with this divine vision of seeing everything as God, as a fantasy land. You see it as you did in your ordinary consciousness, only now it's different because you feel your oneness with God, and through that oneness with God, you feel your connection with everybody that you meet. Only now you can relate to them as human beings. You see them in their sorrows. You see their ignorance. You see the difficulties that they're encountering as a soul. Where before, where you're imbued only with the divine vision, you couldn't really relate to people as human beings who are in a state of ignorance. Now you can see them, but you are not, and I repeat, not lowered into a state of separation from God. You are now able to operate in this body. You are now able to operate in the world. You can encounter people. You can meet them. You can understand them. You can know them on a human level. But now you see everything in the human as divine in this sense, that it is all evolving towards a divine union. Now, some people are going forward, some are going backward. There is very little that can be neutral because you're constantly creating with your mind. And you have to decide what you want. Do you want God realization? Do you want to have that? Because you have to fight all the old tendencies. The current within your body and within your own human consciousness, within the subconscious, is not streaming towards God. It's streaming away, back out into the world. And you have to be ever watchful. You have to be striving. And if you're not striving for God, then you're not going to make it. Now, that does not mean that you live a dry life at all. But you learn to lift up this consciousness. You learn to keep your focus upon God alone. Now, Master used to teach to focus your attention here at the ajna and to keep it there, even while you're talking to people, while you're doing business, while you're driving, doing anything in this world, you just learn to keep your attention there. And it's a wonderful practice. You can combine that with Hong Sa. And so you've got a practice right there that is not dependent upon sitting with your eyes closed or in a deep state of meditation. This is something you can do always. Mother and Papa also talked about chanting God's name. And that's something you can also do at all times in all places. And as you do this, you help to purify the mind. It's the same as the Hong Sa, only it's a little different method. And so these are the simple methods that were taught to us along with Kriya Yoga and the attitude of service and serving this world and serving humanity through the things that you do. Now, we should give up the idea that service means that you have given up all your worldly goods and now you're living on the street someplace and you're as poor as the people that you're serving. That it's not necessary. That's the asceticism that Master said is the bypath. It can be wonderful if that's what God calls you to. But we are all householders, and as such, we live in homes, we have cars, there are certain obligations to meet in a worldly sense. And so we go out to meet those things, but we do it in a spirit of service. It's been almost 2 weeks since I've been home. We've been out traveling down to Ashland and then over to Sunnyside. We have spiritual centers in both of these places. And meeting with devotees and doing the spiritual work that God has called us to do at these places. And it is such a wonderful thing to be able to work with an attitude of service. The person who is standing in front of you is God in human form, and perhaps they have some need of something. They're in search of something. And you can do something for them. If nothing else, you can give them a smile. You can give them a positive thought. You can give them courtesy and treat them with the respect that they deserve as a soul. This is tremendous, just to do this. And then perhaps God calls upon you to do something extra for them. But even though you may be doing something for a living to make money, doesn't mean you need to divorce that from service or the idea of service. In fact, it's quite the opposite. Take the attitude of service, and your business will grow. Make yourself available to individuals, but always in the light of God. There are many things that come to us as tests. Sometimes earning money can be a test because we get a little bit more money, we get a little bit more prosperity, and suddenly we get a little filled with it, you know. And we want to extend ourselves out, and we see the possibilities, and we want to make it grow and grow, which is fine in a way. But when it promotes greed within your soul, when it promotes division, and you see yourself as having to separate yourself from God in order to make this happen, then that becomes a thinking error. And there you have to pull back and remember where your real source of prosperity comes from. It comes from God. Now, we don't ordinarily think of prosperity as coming from within us. We think of it as coming from outside. We earn a certain amount of money, and then we're able to buy things. It's all out there in the world. And so the mind can act as if one thing is divorced from the other. The world is divorced from God. But if God has made everything, then God has made you. God has made this world. God has made your job. God has made the car that you drive. God has made everything that you have. And the truth is that the source comes from within you. Take a wealthy man, take away all of his money, and if he's earned his own money, he'll earn a fortune again. Turn around, give all of that money to somebody who's very poor and lives in poverty consciousness. They'll soon be divorced from all of the money that you gave them, and they'll be right back where they started. This is true. Consciousness of prosperity is something you have to grow into. And as you allow yourself to receive more, then you are able to give more. And as you are able to give more, you're able to receive more. And when it comes from a spiritual source, there is no limit and there is no end to what you can receive. But here is the really beautiful part. In receiving, you are not taking from another individual. You are becoming a conduit through which God gives to this world. And when you take everything that you do and you imbue it with a spiritual vibration, you are adding value, spiritual value, even to the material things that you do. There's a wonderful story of the two women who were down baking bread. There was an area of town where the furnaces were lit, and they would all gather together and bake loaves of bread together. And in this case, there is two women that were there together. And one woman was very spiritually minded, very sattvic. And when she was chanting Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram as she made her bread, she had a smile on her face, and she just very quietly went about her business. There's another woman there, and she was quite arrogant and full of herself and always talking and gossiping about this person and the other. And the two were making bread together, and finally it came that their bread was made at the same time, and they put it into their individual baskets. And as they were getting ready to go, they bumped into each other, and the baskets went down and all the bread with it onto the ground. So they were picking up the different loaves of bread. And naturally, the woman who was sattvic in nature, her loaves tasted sweeter, and there became some discussion about whose loaves were who. They looked identical. And a saint who happened to be passing by heard this discussion going on, and he said, "I think I can solve your problem." He recognized the two natures of the two women. And so he very carefully, he picked up each loaf of bread. And when he picked up the sattvic woman's bread, he would hear the vibration of Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram in each one of those loaves of bread. And he would put that into that woman's basket. And the other, he would feel bitterness. He would feel anger. He would feel hardship. And he knew which basket those would go into. And so he is able to sort out all their loaves of bread. Just think, everything that you do becomes imbued with the vibration of consciousness that you do it with. And you either add value to this world, spiritual value, or you take it away. There's no neutrality here. And you have to really search your soul to see what you do with your life. Do you add value to this world? I knew a man one time, he took up Kriya Yoga and he's meditating. But he wasn't real assertive about it, and he'd allow himself to sleep in until 11 o'clock, 11:30 in the morning. And then he had decided to do his Kriya. Well, the rest of the house was active and people were up and talking and making noise, and he would come upstairs and he'd chew them out royally because they were disturbing his meditation. And this is the way some people are. Swami Satchitananda described the man who was interrupted in his meditation, and he's so angry, and he got up and he gave the person a good piece of his mind, then tried to sit down. Now he said, do you think that individual can now peacefully sit down and meditate? And gave the next example of the other man who was interrupted in his meditation. He thought to himself, God has some service for me to do. And he went up and he answered the door. And he asked what he could do to help. The individual had a small request. The man went and did it. And when he returned to his meditation blanket, he was peaceful. It all went smoothly. So you have to decide, what kind of life do you want? This spiritual life cannot be something that you divide up and say, this I do for God and this I do for myself. That has to go out the window. That's old thinking. This new thought, this new way of being has to penetrate into every aspect of your life. Now, God gives me many times very intimate thought patterns that an individual has. And I don't do it because I go after it or because I try to get it. He just gives it to me. And it helps me to be able to work with that individual. And most times I don't mention what God has given me. But I'm able to speak to it, or I'm able to pray for it. I'm able to work with it in some way. We all have the privacy of our own thoughts. But if you really think about all the things that you think, that you say, that you do, and as Jesus said, what you think you do in secret will be shouted from the rooftops. Now, how would you like it if those thoughts, if those actions were to be broadcast on the front page of the newspaper tomorrow? And there would be many of us who would be shamefaced at the idea of it. We don't want to be caught without our lamps being full. Jesus told the beautiful parable of the 10 virgins. Now, the 10 virgins represent the 5 different chakras in polarity. 5 virgins kept oil in their lamps all through the night, and 5 let their lamps get empty of oil. What does this mean? It means that the 5 virtuous aspects of the chakras conserve their life energy, and therefore there is light that comes through the night, and they stay awake. You stay awake in God consciousness. And when the groom comes, that is the Christ consciousness, you're attuned to it. You're waiting for it. You want it. And there are the 5 different chakras on the negative side that dissipate their oil. They're focused on the things of the world, on the things of the ego, on the little mind. And they get so carried away with this that they completely dissipate their oil. They completely dissipate their life force. And when the Christ comes, when the suitor comes, they are asleep. They're asleep to divine consciousness. They're no longer attuned to it. And they miss their opportunity. Now, we always would like to think that we're ready. But you have to think through the day and say, am I inwardly always attuning myself to divine consciousness? Or are those times when I go to sleep, when I completely forget what I'm all about? Am I about my Father's business, or am I about the world business? Now, you can, and I tell you this absolutely, that you can operate in this world and be in the world, but not of it. Always withdraw a portion of yourself, a certain percentage of yourself, and keep that with God. And if you do this, you will always be like the five virgins that are waiting, that are awake. They keep themselves separate from the world slightly. And they keep themselves focused upon the divine consciousness. This is such a wonderful opportunity that we all have. We're here to work consciously, to grow spiritually. And this is the real purpose for being born, to be about our Father's business. Isn't that a wonderful thing? And we are given these high, high techniques. But as is anything that is given to us, there is a responsibility that goes with it. Continuing on with Master here, another interpretation of this stanza has been given by Lahari Mahasya. When a yogi practices Kriya Yoga, withdrawing his mind from the senses by disconnecting the life force from the five sense telephones, he is spoken of as following the path of Karma Yoga. He is a true Karman. During this earlier state of attempts at God union, the yogi has to perform various spiritual actions of proper breathing, life force control, and fighting distractions and concentration. Therefore, he is spoken of as following the path of esoteric Karma Yoga. At this state, the yogi is identified with actions. He is a Karman. When the yogi is able to see the spiritual light at the Kutastha, or the Christ center between the eyebrows, and to withdraw his life force from the Christ, from the nervous system of the five sense telephones, he enters the state of esoteric tapasya, ascetical renunciation. His mind being disconnected from the senses then exists in a state of esoteric renunciation. He is a tapasavan. When the yogi is further able to unite his mind with the wisdom and bliss of his soul, he is a follower of the esoteric jnana. This is called the jnanan state of yogi. In this last high state, when the soul, free from all bodily, worldly consciousness, is united with the blessed cosmic spirit, the devotee is called the esoteric Raja Yogi. This state of final yoga or union of the soul and the spirit is the loftiest. He who attains it is the true yogi. He has reached the higher spiritual planes than the one who has achieved only the state of tapasavan, karman, or jnanan. The real yogi knows God as ever-existing, ever-conscious, ever-new bliss. He perceives all creation as God's dreams. I think Master is just beautiful, beautiful in the way that he describes this. And, of course, we follow the stream, the river further upstream, and we find Lahari Mahasya. And beyond that, Babaji, and beyond that, Christ, and beyond that, the absolute pure nature of God. And it all begins and it ends in that absolute true nature of God. Fulfill your life's purpose. Let yourself not be dissuaded from entering into the deepest states of realization. Find there the eternal joy ever springing from your soul. Find there yourself ever talking to God, communing with Him, and eventually merging completely into His being. I'd like to close here with a prayer that is a blessing. It comes from the Essenes and the Dead Sea Scrolls of the Qumran. May He bless you with all good and keep you from all evil, and illumine your heart with insight into life, and grace you with knowledge of things eternal, and lift up His gracious countenance to you for everlasting peace. Isn't that beautiful? Just beautiful. In one way, the message is absolutely fresh. It's new. It's exciting as it enters into the consciousness. And in another way, it is the eternal truth, the eternal Dharma that has been taught from time beginning. But it is only real and meaningful when you come into the state of realization. You go beyond the idea of mental conception and you go into that much deeper, much more profound, life-changing Dharma. The Dharma that is inborn, not that you learn with the mind. I'm truly filled with joy and bliss of being able to be here with you today, to focus our attention on these high and great truths. I can speak to you of these truths because I have experienced them, but they are not mine alone. They are universal. And it is time, high time, for this world to awaken to these great truths so that we may live in peace, we may live in harmony, and most of all, that individuals everywhere may realize their true oneness with the divine. It is time for this world to awaken. And it is time for each one of us to lead through example. Through example. Become that which you strive for first. And then you will be a beacon of light for this entire world. Please join me in prayer. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Peace. Bliss. Amen. Namaste.